Hi, I'm Kristen. I'm a social self-prez 9-wing-1-9-6-3.
Hi, I'm Kaisa. I'm a sexual social 9-wing-8 with the 3 and 5 fixes.
Hi, I'm Sammy. I'm a self-prez social 9-wing-1 with 5-wing-4 and 4-wing-3 fixes.
We were sent a voice message from a listener who is a sexual social 9-wing-1. I won't say the whole type, but and she had a kind of disillusionment with her therapist, kind of pointing out that, do you even like the people that you're kind of bringing in and talking about in therapy? Because she kind of was focused on thinking that she understood where the problem was, like, oh, I'm too busy for a relationship or blah, blah, blah. And he kind of threw her into a loop by bringing up, well, do you even like the person? And she kind of started to realize that, like, oh my God, have I ever liked anybody I was with? And so what does that mean about the dominant instinct? What does that mean about, you know, gaze and love and attraction and the pull and all that stuff? So we thought to address it here and tie it into the body center and what, because the body center holds sexuality as well. I think it kind of holds every instinct, because what we even like first started talking about the instincts, it is kind of like the body is where all of those nervous systems that, you know, the heart, the head, everything is connected to. So like all your instincts are kind of in each center. And they're all going on at once. So like, what is specifically the body and why is it linked to sexuality?
Yeah,
is a topic.
To what you said, I would like to add that she was also asking about of her situation when she feels that she might have not been in love with the person, but with the sense of infatuation that comes from being attracted.
Mm-hmm. She wasn't finding anything very specifically commenting on this process, that disillusionment. And I think that it's important to talk about that, because it's an experience that when people have, then it is just kind of like, where do you go after that? That the instinct, the sexual instinct can be like, a lot of the stuff out there can say like how you're disconnected from it or how it works or whatever. And so sometimes the experience of it taking different forms and either maturing or how it shows up kind of immaturely, like we've talked about a bit on the podcast, but for like a personal kind of like hit of disillusionment and now what sort of thing is where I got the vibe of the voice note.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually curious, Kaisa, what you have, because I wondered if you either experience something similar or what your ideas are or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Well, first I want to say that it's really like wonderful to have voice notes from our listeners. Mm-hmm. And please keep them coming. And yeah, it seems that our listener friend is going through a disillusionment process of the sexual instinct, like becoming aware that there's something going on between her and the love interest, which is not about the love interest at all, but it's coming from her. And that's also the in-between space that we have been talking about, where like one can explore their own sense of attraction and what happens in this in-between space. And I hear in her words, there's like a felt sense of judgment coming from the therapist and maybe judgment coming from her, but that's a very delicate and earth-shattering process that requires gentleness and self-compassion rather than judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Like what she's going through is not a problem to fix, but a natural process and a step forward for greater understanding of her instincts. And that's the kind of process we need to go through. We are always going to project something onto the partners and our relationships, but we can nevertheless approach it with curiosity and like conscious intention. And there's an element of being in love with the sense of infatuation. But I also kind of want to bring up how the sense of being in love with love reflects the innate love within her that the potential partners have a way of bringing up in us, bring that love into our awareness in a very special way. And exploring what that love is, aside from partners or relationships, would be like a worthwhile exploration. I'm also hearing some conflicting elements in the therapist's words, like a felt judgment of not being attracted. But on the other hand, getting high about attraction. And I'm hearing that from her own experience as well. What was also interesting to me is that she talks a lot about gaze and wanting gaze in connection and being like addicted to gaze. And then there's an issue of gaze arising between her and the therapist. So she expresses longing for gaze, but is not getting that from the therapist. She feels like the therapist is not seeing her. On the other end, the therapist claims that she's not seeing others and wants her to see something while not himself seeing her. So it seems as if something about her personal situation might be transferring to the connection between her and the therapist. And I definitely think that she should bring this up with the therapist. Like, as we learned from our previous episode, conflict situations have potential for deeper understanding of ourselves and of others. So there might be something moving that's like coming from both her and from the therapist's psyche. And before we go into the body stuff, I would kind of like to talk about gaze more in this context.
Mm-hmm.
Like, often behaviors that seem addictive reflect a very deep need in us that needs acknowledgement. And instead of addiction, there could be a recognition of a profound longing for gaze and being witnessed with love. That she has. It's corny for humans, and it's totally normal to desire certain things in connection that feel pleasurable and enjoyable. And it's great that she recognizes this desire of gaze and its importance in navigating attraction. And yeah, in David's overlap scheme, sexual social overlaps with two. So it's like gaze on steroids. and both sexual dominance stackings actually correlate to image types. So there's some sense of like gaze or soul gazing or whatever gazing going on. And like being hot and sexy speaks of the quality of a person as an object, but gaze is what happens in between two people. It speaks about the quality of connection and interaction. And that's what the sexual instinct is kind of tracking, the in-between space that constellates between two people. And especially sexual with social is going for that like gazing stuff for the chemistry. And it's almost like one can be infatuated and falling for the other person's capacity to connect deeply and like offer gaze, not the person themselves. Yeah, it's great that our listener friend took time to check in with her felt sense and emotions and body about what she does or does not want, because being attracted doesn't necessarily mean wanting to have sex or share a life with someone. Like, there can be chemistry without either of those things. The sexual attraction is in a way separate from an emotional relationship and exists on a completely different plane. Like, when she expressed that she didn't want to have sex and there wasn't an emotional connection that's social, and she got uncomfortable when the partner was suggesting planning time ahead or having like some kind of life together or whatever, that's self-press. So it's great that she took the time to consider and feel into those instincts, mm-hmm. rather than go into the ever deepening infatuation that's just gonna roll down the hill like a snowball eternally, like deepening and beginning without any boundaries or consideration if it's like actually a good relationship or if it's something we want emotionally. Like Lacan said, which was something you, Kristen, brought up that was great, that Lacan said there is no sexual relationship, and because of the quality of it being like an objectification. But with working with it and conscious intention and with love, it can be, yeah. mutual connection. And from my own experience, I can say that I had the exact same disillusionment of like, what the fuck is this drive that is determining the course of my life without my consent? And it felt like a very important process to understand the difference between the sexual like infatuation and like the other needs that I want, like social and self-press needs, and also take those into consideration, not just go for the infatuation. And it was really a difficult time when the disillusionment was happening. Like it felt very 9 to 6. In a way, I was doubting my whole life and all the decisions, and I was wondering if I could ever trust the sexual instinct. But actually, it's like it's an indispensable source of guidance that is in its own way telling where my passions are, who I want to include in my life, what I want to include in my life. And I'm now in a space of like observing it take place. Like taking some time for myself and observing when I feel chemistry, when I feel pulled or attracted, and like, I wonder where this is coming from and how it feels in me and how it feels in my body. What are the sensations? And can I just allow them to be sensations that are passing through instead of like making them into something they are not, or like going for some impulsive decisions? Because it's, yeah, like, yeah, I think she's going through a very natural, normal process, and I like deeply appreciate her vulnerability in and courage in sharing that with us. So yeah, that's what I want to say.
That's all.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. That was very beautifully put.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, these like attractions, they kind of arise in the felt sense of the body and in the sensory perception. Sometimes it's like gentle breezes. Sometimes it's strong waves of electricity that wash over. It's a way to reflect on what happens in the in-between space of the attraction itself. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with feeling it and getting high about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I also think it's completely normal, like not even just a nine thing of like kind of following that attraction, but not actually liking the person. Like, yeah. I think everybody can, was in a place like that as well, of just like, do I even like this person? And I think that's kind of where like the projection, like when we address sexual projection, like, of course it'll be projected, but then there's something behind that projection. Like there's something in that projection. That's why you have like, you know, the honeymoon phase, and then all of a sudden it drops, the disillusionment happens, and you realize, oh, I'm with a person, and like this person's different, or this person's like, you know, the projection falls and you realize like who they really are or whatever. Which that is like painful, but it's completely normal. And it's actually, it should happen. Like I'm thinking of like people who are in relationships, like that should happen, because then you can actually acknowledge the person for who they are rather than something you feel as if you lack. So like when we're talking about sexual projection and stuff like that, like Jung would talk about people who are married and they become just like two halves of a person, but together they are complete because they're projecting everything they don't have in the other, right? And like when you allow the projection to actually fall, though, then you can be the whole person and you can be with another whole person, whatever wholeness quote unquote means. I don't think it means like perfect or whatever. It just means that you're following down a path, an individuated path, that you're reclaiming parts of yourself that you don't have to constantly project onto other people or whatever. So I think like in her situation, being in a place where she isn't sure, like, okay, well, what do I do now? Like, I think this is where what you were saying, Kaisa, with like kind of reclaiming the projection, like that projection still means something. Like it's not happening for no reason. It's not happening because you're like selfish or vapid or whatever. Like there's a reason it's happened. It's like showing you something about yourself. So it's really like your own gaze that is called for when something like that comes up. It's like, what am I wanting other people to see about me that I'm not seeing myself? And how can I give myself that gaze? And usually when I give myself that gaze, then I start to feel the love of the process of reclaiming all these different parts of myself, you know, like remembering, like I'm remembering these parts of myself, and I can fall in love with that process. And I think that ties in perfectly with the body center, because what we started even talking about, that the body center is the container for that process. It is the thing that the whole alchemical process belongs in, that you begin to have a dialogue with your inner realm, your unconscious, when we're doing with dreams, psyche, whatever. Like the world becomes more alive when you allow that process to start happening inside of you, inside that container, rather than with another person where that projection lies, you know. Like, of course, there still will always be other people throughout your whole life. You'll project things you never knew you cut off of yourself. Like, that's the point. It's going to happen all throughout life in different ways. And can you fall in love with that process, though, and know that you have a center? Because I think this as well, with her being self-pres blind, like And you as well, Kaisa, like, can you establish that center that everything comes back to rather than feeling so dispersed? Like, who am I then? Like, you have the capacity inside of yourself to really come back to and understand and reflect, which is like the same process we went through with anger. There's a huge process of reflection that doesn't often get talked about, which is why I think sometimes people feel like they have nothing to do. What do I do? I think it's reflecting and remembering who you are and where that comes from and where is that trying to take you? And that's like the scary part of individuating, is because when you hit that point of disillusionment, it's like, oh, now what? Like, who am I? What do I do? But that's like the best place to start in the scariest part.
Those are like really wonderful points.
Thank you. Also, too, I want to add, like, this, you know, is just something I think I mentioned when we were doing the sexual instinct stuff with dreams. But I don't know. Maybe I did expand on this, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. It reminds me, too, of, like, with Marion Woodman has this kind of, like, idea, and Jungians have this idea that, like, if a man's anima is his soul, she was kind of thinking like for women that they are already ensouled and they are like their initiation in life is to understand how they are connected to matter. So it's the soul is this, you know, airy thing that we need to ground. And so that's why with feminine work, with body work, it is an active attempt to put the soul into the body, because she kind of described it as women being very just like all over the place because it's like a soul without a container. So she emphasized body work so that you can start to build the container for the soul. And the soul is linked to the body. So that's also something as well that I think of when I hear especially self-pres blind experiences, because either stacking the love can just feel so like chaotic and sporadic and like it doesn't have a home essentially, because the instinct of self-preservation is where the home is. So I think of that as well, of like establishing that there is a container, a home for the soul, for that love, for those projections that you discover in other people, but then reclaim. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So that's another thing I thought of as well while listening to it, which is why I think body work can also help, just like practicing the felt sense. Being in touch with that, because even too, like, I don't know, Kaisa, if you have a similar experience or what, but like when you're doing body work, like if you can feel a better boundary within yourself than you did previously with doing this kind of work, when it comes to this sort of topic.
Wait, can you simplify what's the question?
So like, I've noticed when I do more consistent body work that I don't, like, one social thing is that, like, I used to get incredibly stressed when, like, people wouldn't respond to me for a while or whatever, and, like, I could feel my whole body, like, kind of tensing. And when I'm doing this body work stuff and the stuff with dreams, I've noticed that, like, even though my head goes to, like, oh, they're not responding to me, my body is like, nah, all's cool. It's fine. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, my body has like, it's not getting nervous over the same things it was anymore. It's such a subtle difference, but it's like really impactful to be like, oh shit, I'm okay. Everything's safe. So I don't know if there's like a sexual equivalent that you've experienced at all that like is a subtle shift in the felt sense experience than the past.
Yeah, definitely. Well, a couple of things that come to mind is that like with a sexual instinct, there can be a way that it feels all the time that half of me is missing and there's just like a bleeding being ripped apart.
Mm.
And so in my body, being in my body, it's like, yep, I'm all together. There's no big rip apart.
I love and, that.
Yeah. And another thing is that because there's a lot of identifying with my connections and with sexual attractions. And then remember, hey, that there's actually me, this like lump of sensory experience that is me, that is still steadfast no matter what goes on with the connections. And like that my whole existence is not, it's not limited just to those like connections. It's also existing as myself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah. And the other thing, yeah, I've learned that as well with my own thing. Like the other instincts can give you energy. Imagine. Yeah. Like self-pres things can give you energy and ground you, and social things, like for me, sexual things, like there's different kinds of energies too to allow in rather than the like sexual for you, but social for me kind of dominance. But yeah, I don't know. Sammy, you don't have to have any opinions if you don't want to. Like, I don't know if you had anything to add.
Yeah, just I'm in like processing mode right now. Mm-hmm. I just don't have anything to give.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when I first listened to it too, I kind of thought of even both of our experiences, like maybe we don't have the sexual charge all the time, but even just that thing of like, what is making me actually like this person? Like you talked about having self-pres interest.
That's
and like,
yeah,
like that being a big, like some kind of projection, but then a disillusionment of like, oh, do I actually, or are we just like liking the same self-pres stuff? And for me, it's like, it is very social of like, is this person giving me the social kind of attention and whatever that I want. And it's actually only taken me recently to realize the impacts of that, of like constantly outsourcing like some kind of need that I should be giving more of myself rather than like heavily relying on externally. That's why I figured like everyone could relate to this, but it, you know, doesn't make it any less hard to go through for each individual person.
Yeah, she was wondering if this is sexual instinct or if this is universal. I think sexual dominance bring up in a specific way stuff that can be universal to all of us, but are like in our lives in a very center stage in a very specific way. But like probably a lot of people can relate to it, and
I think everyone
find could. Something that they can find in their own experiences to mirror it.
I think everyone could. It's just a matter of if they'd admit it or not. Because I mean, and I would even suggest reading some of Jung's work on I think he called it, like when he talks about anima and animus and stuff, the syzygy, is that how you pronounce that? It's like S Z-Y-G, whatever. You'll know when you see the word if you look it up. But he talks about like what he thought was like one of the main problems with marriages is that you would project the internal other onto them, and then therefore they kind of take the role of your other half that you think you lack. And so when that projection's occurring, then you're not actually seeing the person for who the person is. You're seeing them as the thing that you lack and the thing that they'll continue to complete for you, you know? So that's why he encouraged the connection to the inner other, the anima or the animus, whatever that may look like, appear, do, because that's the your guide into going down the path of individuating and wholeness. So yeah, I think that's that applies to everybody, and it's just a matter of if the person lets the disillusionment happen. So that's why I think the disillusionment is, even though it's painful, is one of the most important things to happen, because it's your path then. Like, then you can take your path and you can go on your direction rather than constantly projecting the lack of who you really are, you know? But I read a lot of his stuff when we were doing the sexual instinct, because of that, understanding the polarities, why they get projected, stuff like that. And then what to do with it. But he doesn't talk much about body work, which is why I think that is still, important.
I wish I had a way of relating this more to the body center, but I'm at a loss here.
I think the biggest thing is that container piece. Like, this is a really big call, I think, for finding that center within yourself. Because finding that center, like when all the internal work happens, you create a container for yourself. And you explore what that means, you know, with body, where is anger, and where are these projections? Who are these projections? The archetypes inside of you, like when that process starts to happen and you allow that to say things to you and have a dialogue in that way, the external stuff will start to make more sense. I don't think the external stuff is going to make sense until the internal stuff happens. So like what we discovered with each instinct, that it's like, how do you, if you're social blind, how do you really know what to do with social or the social instinct if you don't even have a felt experience or resonance with what social means inside of you? Like, it's constantly wounded. And so you're going to relate externally with that instinct with the wound instead of your perception of that instinct. So it's very similar with things like this, is like, where's your resonance on what it is you're projecting? And what does that mean to you? Like, what does the gaze of another person, or the pull or the, chemistry, like what does that take on inside of you, and where does that resonate so that the external becomes a bit more clear on what you do about it? That's why it's hard to tell people what to do, because everyone's going to resonate differently.
You need to be careful when you ask people, what does this mean to you? That might upset them. I'm speaking from experience.
And that's good. If it makes you angry, then that means there's something about it. There's something so vital within that. If it pisses you off, let yourself get angry over it. Because anger is when you individuate, when you allow yourself to feel that anger.
Mm-hmm.
Tammy, did you listen to those episodes?
I'm like, I got through almost all of the first one, but I didn't get to the, I know.
Damn it.
Anyway, but you were in our group chat. We discussed that when I got angry.
we discussed the anger and what had happened. It was really, you got to listen to it, because it was so beautiful. I will.
I know. I'm excited to listen to it. I want to hear how you guys processed it.
Oh, did you randomly start crying anytime 2 weeks ago? Because you made a joke in it that like Sammy's crying somewhere.
I didn't, but I can easily
lie and say that you did for the listeners.
Yeah, I'll do that. They believe it.
Yeah. But yeah, and the anger, oh my gosh, yeah, if you get angry, and I think that's too why even like the therapist bringing that up, and it sounds like there was a lot of frustration within her. Like, that's like maybe it's not specifically the therapist, but like there's something that the therapist is representing and holding that I liked what you said, Kaisa, even just bringing that up to the therapist, like what the dynamic means and maybe what it triggered inside of her, because for him to be able to hold that complex, it could be something she could work out. Like if you follow that train long enough, like what about what he's saying is feeling prickly inside of you, and then like what happens when you actually have that dialogue back and forth about the whole situation, where does it lead? I think that's the thing with anger, is like when you actually allow it to exist, where does it lead? If you play out the fantasy of what you're angry about and you're just honest and all this stuff, like it probably will lead somewhere of like a deep wound, a pain, like with what Kaisa, it was those things. And that shows you then where your path is, like where you go from there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in my understanding, it's part of a therapist's job to like be in that space where they can hold space for that kind of process to happen.
Yeah. That's the container.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I think, and you know, this is another great example of what to work with in the container of, this is the process of alchemy. I mean, like tons of Jungians have written on alchemy. I like James Hillman's work on alchemy, that there are these elements that you work with inside of yourself of like, what's holding a lot of this energy. And when you allow it to dissolve, and you allow it to transform into something else, like, what do you get from that? Like, what are you rebirthing from this experience, from having one thing that used to be this element transform into a completely different element? Like, that's the process of alchemy. And it's interesting. I think when we talk about dream symbols and stuff, I have a lot on the different alchemical components, because they talked about quote unquote bodies, but so like not really human bodies, but you can translate it into human bodies, and like how that process of regeneration kind of happens, rebirth happens in the way that your body's communicating to you with symptoms and stuff like that. So the disillusionment that just happened is like part of the alchemical process. It's turning the heat up to the point where it's like, okay, now something can really change. Now something can actually take a different form. Oh, one of the things that her voice note reminded me of is he talked about sulfur. James Hillman talked about sulfur and what that role is in alchemy. And sulfur really sounds like the sexual instinct, because he talks about it being like intense desire, that it just burns everything up. It's like the active, like, you know, ingredient of just like fiery passion kind of thing. So he gives all these descriptions of sulfur that sound like exactly like the sexual instinct. And he said that in the alchemical process, one of the things that like you do, or how you work with sulfur, is adding a mercury. So a mercurial element helps diffuse sulfur. And the mercurial element is just, he describes it as an insight, that it's like this sudden insight that like when you're targeting your object of desire, right? And like the sulfur wants to just burn it the fuck up. It wants it so bad, right? The mercurial element comes in as a block. It's a sudden insight that goes, wait a minute, like, what is this thing? And what am I actually, you know, being pulled towards? And what I'm like, it's questioning. It's, you know, Mercury can be associated with therapy, astrology, all this other stuff. It's an insight of remembering and understanding and deconstructing what path you're trying to go on. So that as well, I mean, could maybe help with this whole thing, is like, where is the mercurial element that can come in and give you an insight as to what you're going through that can help diffuse the really big impacts that sulfur can have.
Mm.
And then, and I think he described it as like these two elements then create a dance, that it's not so polar, like it's not such a strong polarity. It's more of like a dance between the two that happens, that creates kind of a sort of like a harmony, like a fluidity, instead of like burning up and dying.
Yeah, I also like when the some Jungians have said that, like, when there are like very big feelings, they can be like uncomfortable and whatever, but they are the prima materia for alchemy. They tell something about what matters so much that you want to walk it through the alchemical process.
That's very true, yeah. That it holds great power. And that power comes in with the body center too. Because it's also like establishing or claiming your autonomy, that when you allow these unconscious things to continue running your autonomy, but you start catching them like, now wait a minute, like that doesn't feel right, or there's that disillusionment, then you can kind of reclaim your autonomy. Like, you, especially in this sexual instinct scenario, like it's showing like, okay, you know, if this is what's happening, then how can I relate to people in a way that's more authentic to me and kind of have my own autonomy in decisions and what I actually want to see in people versus how do I see things in myself? Like, that's a very big process of having autonomy.
Yeah, and like when something this big happens, we often might feel like wanting to like shut it down because it's a lot, but there's a process that's happening, and it's best to allow it to happen and like be curious about where it wants to take you.
Oh yeah, I think that's a good, like, feeling the pain is really a good thing, because you can actually like allow the reality of a situation to take its place. But then, yeah, like allowing that pain and kind of like with everything that we're saying, turn into curiosity, so you can fall in love with the process that will start to unfold, that creates difference and shows you the path of where you're going, rather than dwelling on it too much, that it's it leads nowhere, you know. It's always going to lead somewhere.
For sure.
I'm trying to think if there's anything with the body center and sexuality specifically. I think that's where people can also learn how to be more open with how they want to express themselves too, because sexuality is also about expression, and the body center is used for all kinds of different creative expressions. So allowing, and that's like a social element as well, that there's different ways you can really step into your kind of power and way of expressing that's more aligned with what you want to bring to either close relationships or not so close, like just casual relationships, like any kind of interaction with anybody. There's a way that breaking this kind of process down can help come into more of an authentic expression as well. Whether it be through social qualities or like the sexual flavor of yourself, whether you're trying to attract someone or not, it's still there. It's always there in everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's why I think it's sometimes like it's okay to, like, a lot of people will talk about it like it's meant to attract people, but it's also like you. It's also how you're just like perceiving yourself and how you're relating to everybody. Like, it's not something you only turn on when you're like wanting to attract someone.
Yeah, it's almost like you want to make life and yourself feel attractive to you so that you actually kind of want to live your life.
Yeah. That's really true. It's being in life. Yeah. I think that's why too, with the body, it like the archetype of like matter, of, you know, soul, of body, like that is all in the world. And it is connected to the world and life itself. And, you know, your soul has desires that the body is indebted to, essentially. And there's just so much stuff that clutters that makes us disconnected from life. So it's that process that I say, like, you can fall in love with. Like, yeah, that's the process of just being more in life and connected to it and experiencing it as not just an intellectual, cognitive kind of thing, but as like a sensation, as a sensual experience.
Yeah, and that's good that you mentioned that. That's also often what we have been talking about already too, that when like disillusionments happen, we might go to like a very bad thought train about, or a narrative of what's happening. But it's important to allow the sensations to come and the process to take place in the body, because it has its own timing and own meaning and purpose. And it might only open us like afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to trust the process.
Yeah, it's a cycle. It's trying to move through a cycle and letting the body have its role.
I'm actually thinking of at some point opening some sort of coaching service for sexual instinct stuff, or like, yeah, I'm not sure what the form is. I think it would be up to the client if they want like companionship or help or advice or gaze or whatever. Well, not at the moment. I'm a little bit busy with school, but maybe like in the future. That might be something that awesome. Yeah, that's something I would really want to do.
I think you should do it.
Me too.
I think you'd be really good at it.
Yeah. Thanks. I think so too.